Mr. Clayton, how the heck are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I was watching you two in the last hour. Being Fashion Friday, I can't tell you how many people have asked me to ask you where you get your suits. You style so beautifully.
Where I get my suits? Oh, that is a very good question. Well, I typically go into places that you would not normally expect me to go.
Mm-hmm.
I would go into Burlington. I go into thrift shops. I go into all of these creative places to kind of find things that are different. And because of my body type, I'm able to go in, buy off-the-rack type stuff, pair it with more colors and do creative things and some nice shoes, some socks, and put it together. And, you know, and I love compliments because, you know, my suits don't really cost that much. You know,
you're just real people.
Just real people because, you know, the reality is I have to be on television every day and you want to look different and present a look. I like to be stylish, so one of my things, I don't want to look the same. So how do I do that and maintain a good budget? I don't want to spend all of my, because you can very easily spend a paycheck if you're trying to buy custom clothes or doing that nature. Now, I do have some custom suits that I still have once I played, while I was playing, but I don't indulge in things of things like that anymore. I look for colors that pop and price tags that are appealing.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. You're a married man with children. You got to watch the budget, right?
I splurge on my babies and my beautiful wife, and Daddy finds a creative way to get a look that's my own and affordable, definitely affordable.
Do your kids like to go shopping with you?
You know, they really don't because you know, they're like their mom. They want the they're more name brandish type kids because they're in school and all of the cool kids have the, it's all name brand oriented. But my daughter does love when Daddy brings home these outfits. It's just my wife that knows that maybe these outfits won't last too long because they aren't the best quality, which is okay for me because they have growth spurts. And I can't tell you how many times I'm going to my local church that's right about a mile away from my house, and I'm donating bags and bags of clothes every single month, of clothes and toys, because they've grown so fast. So I'd like to kind of keep it in budget by going to buy them different outfits that are, you know, you get 10 outfits for $200 instead of two outfits for $200, you know? So my daughter definitely enjoys Daddy's different fashion styles and colors.
That's very cool. I also learned something about you this morning watching Studio 10. I didn't know you started your career with, you know, working out with the Globetrotters. You were, what, 7 years old?
I started my career because I never wanted to play sports. I was more of a Monopoly, Scrabble, playing with Barbie dolls because my younger sister loved to play with Barbies, and she was my best bud growing up. So I was more inside, and my dad, my whole family is from Mississippi, so I was a country boy, and I wanted to be out in nature, and I had no interest in sports. And my dad took me to a Harlem Globetrotters game. It was my first game ever going to see a professional. I went to many college games because my uncle was a college coach, and we always went to Alcorn State. I was a ball boy, and I loved to go to be a ball boy, not to go watch football, to be a ball boy on the sidelines. He took me to the Harlem Globetrotters when I was about 7, maybe a little bit younger, and it was my first time where I felt I had a very unique experience. Curly walks up. We had a nosebleed seat, and we were all the way at the top, and I was sitting in, like, the middle of the row. And Curly walks up all the way to the top, and it just so happened to be Curly. And he's pointing at me, and I didn't know it. So all of the kids are jumping up, and they're like me. He's like, no, not you, not you, you. And he's, no, not you. And he was pointing at me, and I slide through the aisle. He spins the ball on my finger in the middle of the aisle, and he gives me his wristband. And ever since that day, I wanted to be under the lights like the Harlem Globetrotters. So I would practice basketball every single day, and I had my lucky wristband. And my dad would come home late at night, and he would wake me up at like 10 o'clock, and, "Mike, did you shoot your jump shots today?" "Nah." He said, "Well, grab your wristband, get out there and shoot you 100. I'll watch you from the window." We had a courtyard, and my dad would watch from his sliding glass window from his bed. And those were just like the best moments of my life growing up, is putting on that lucky wristband and having the luxury of my dad wanting to watch me shoot basketball. So I would try to make every shot, you know, and just be great. So it just inspired me to for a work ethic and for me to have the success that I had learning the game of basketball, because I sucked at it when I first started. But I grew to have, you know, I was one of the state's top basketball recruits. I could have went anywhere to play college basketball. I made All-State. I had all these accolades in basketball. That's why I loved it so much, because I was inspired by an act of service. And it went on deeper, because I've never left a college game or a pro game without giving my gloves or a wristband to a kid, because I know how inspiring that can be. So it kind of changed the way that I carry myself, seeing the Harlem Globetrotters, how we interact with fans, making sure you shake the hands, kiss the babies, you know, and sign the autographs, because you wear a tag, you're an inspiration, and you can change somebody's lives. And the Harlem Globetrotters, they mimic that. That's what they are. They're ambassadors of service. And I learned that from them, and it was great to be in their headquarters yesterday.
Oh, it had to be. It had to be. Now, it's not exactly basketball. Oh, it absolutely did. Now, it wasn't exactly basketball, but you were a first-round draft for the Bucks. It worked out.
Oh, yes. And I was able to put on a few years while I was playing. It was quite expensive, and when I was making a pretty paycheck, I could afford it. But we were doing a celebrity basketball game. You know, I still love the game of basketball. I play in the dad's league at my kid's school. So the game of basketball is something that, you know, got me on fire with football. It made me athletic. It gave me the confidence that I can compete. And football came normal to me. So it kind of enhanced my football ability. So basketball will always be near and dear to my heart.
That's good to know. While you were with the Bucks, what that was, 6 seasons, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And 11 different quarterbacks?
And two of them were starters at two different times. Brian Griese and Chris Sims were rotating at one point. But, yeah, so we had a lot of injuries at quarterback. John Gruden wanted to, you know, always have a veteran quarterback in, and trying to find a young quarterback to be the franchise, and kind of coming up short in that aspect, and always having a veteran guy as a backup plan, and he gets hurt. You got to have another veteran quarterback to kind of come in midway through the season. So a lot of seasons I had 3 different quarterbacks in one season. So it was a tough time, and to go along with my injuries, it was just kind of a revolving door around here. But the guys competed. We had great teams here. We may not have won as many games as we wanted to, but in terms of the competitive edge, I played with some of the best to ever do it. I played with Simeon Rice. I played with Derrick Brooks and Mike Allstott, Rondé Barber. You know, these guys who just took the league by storm and etched their name in the history books as future Hall of Famers. It was a great feeling.
It's very exciting. And you do have a Super Bowl ring, but just not with the Bucks, right?
I do. I was fortunate enough to win Super Bowl 46 with the Giants. I actually got hurt that year. I went on IR in week 12. But it was a very divine year, and Coach Coughlin gave me a tremendous experience to be a leader amongst these guys that I had just became a teammate to, because he valued my veteran leadership. So he would make sure, even when I went on IR, he made sure he would always ask me, "Mike, are you coming in town this week?" Because he would always give me an opportunity to speak before our wide receivers and our group. And always I led a chapel once. And I would always give motivational talks. And during the playoff run, he didn't want anything to change. So he made sure that I was there. Usually when guys go on IR, they go home to be with their families.
Yeah.
But I was going back and forth, back to New York, to keep everything the same, to continue to motivate the guys. So I still felt, even though I didn't play in the Super Bowl, I was on the sideline. I was always a part of it throughout the whole season. And because they wanted me there, that was my role for that team. It wasn't to play football. It was to motivate the guys and have a different experience in terms of building my character to the man that I inspire to be in terms of leadership, and being a product of your choices and not your environment, and taking the positives out of life and going out and still etching yourselves in greatness. And I got a chance to experience that with the Giants, and winning the Super Bowl speaks for itself. It's a dream come true. Not a lot of people have won a national championship in college and a Super Bowl, and I fall in that short list. So I was very blessed to have that experience.
But I really have to think that you have kept your head on straight, your work ethic is the same, and your commitment to the community is the same as well. And you do an awful lot with the community. Tell us about the Generation Next Foundation.
Well, the Generation Next Foundation was started when I was drafted here. I teamed with a lady by the name of Stephanie Crawford, who became the first woman basketball coach at Hillsborough High School. I mean, she was a woman, but she was the men's basketball coach.
Wow.
At Hillsborough High School. And I teamed with Stephanie Crawford on an experience to establish a life skills program in underserved communities, and at her school, which was at the time was Hillsborough High School. And what I found out was that these same kids that I played with when I was a kid, I played with the South Baton Rouge Rams, and it was a very tough area. And those kids were better than me, bigger than me, faster than me, and should have experienced what I experienced in having a successful career. But they had some elements that I didn't have to deal with, like they didn't have both parents in the home. They didn't have the proper discipline. They didn't have the tools that a kid needed to enhance their lives by listening to your coaches, listening to your teachers, paying attention in class, and being motivated to making good grades. They didn't have that. And for that, the end result was them falling by the wayside. So I developed this strong passion for those young kids. And when is the teaching moment? The teaching moment is when the kid is 7 and 8 and 9 years old, because that is when I learned how to separate myself from the other guys. And though that they were better than me, I still had the upper hand because I added a full-rounded aspect of success and wanting to be great. And I was able to grow a passion for these kids. So what I do, the Generation Next Foundation, we focus on underserved kids in poverty areas. Really, I run a mentoring program that pretty much inspires these kids on a daily basis to maximize their full potential, to show them that they're loved by me and my staff, to show them that they have a voice, and to give them encouragement and to be with them through their mistakes. A lot of kids don't have that as well. When, you know, we write kids off so easily when they make a mistake, but when a kid comes out of prison, when a kid has a bad rap, they're easily looked over. And so they need a little bit of a readjustment. And I'm able to provide that with my football background in terms of coaching and how I was coached. I was coached by, you know, Nick Saban, Tom Coughlin, John Gruden, Raheem Morris, like all of these great motivators. So I've added that into my repertoire of how I coach my guys and how I coach them up in life. And so what we do is we service foster kids that are aging out of the foster care system, 18 to 23. A lot of, you know, people will look at these as grown men or adults. So what would they should have it by now, not looking at the reality that these kids come out of the foster care system. They left their parents when they were 10 years old, some of them, and they just never was taught how to cook. They never was taught how to tie a shoe or how to drive. I get these kids at 18, and it's like broken men. And it's so much easier to raise a child than it is to try to teach a broken man. But with my background, I found a lot of great success in tailoring broken men and building them back up to be men that can be and will be become pillars in their own community. If I can affect 100 kids' lives, but I can affect one kid in that community, he can go on and affect millions of lives because he lives it every day, and he has the testimony. So my goal is to try to affect every young man that I come in contact with. I'm a faith-based guy, very spiritual, but I don't force it on anyone. But you will see it, and you will hear it coming out of my voice. And hopefully my influence is enough to impact their lives spiritually as well. When they're interested in my confidence, when they're interested in my passion, and they want to know where it comes from, I get a great testimony by telling them who I used to be, a knucklehead. You know, I like to consider myself a good guy now, but I've been a knucklehead for the majority of my life, and just like them, and how adding the spiritual component has humbled me, has continued my drive to never be content with things and to be a product of your choices and not your circumstances, which a lot of these kids are going through. We had some down moments with the Bucks. You know, we were losing games. I was ridiculed in the paper. People still talk about me dropping balls and stuff. Not taking into account my last two seasons with the Bucks, I wore casts for two straight seasons on my wrist. I never had surgeries, but thumbs jacked up, wrists jacked up. People don't take into account the things that we go through as athletes. They just want their end result for fantasy football, you know? And what people say can hurt you if you're not mentally prepared and able to weather the storm. So I take those football experiences that I had to experience and I apply it to what they're going through now in terms of mental preparation to be great every day. I tell them all the time, when I was in college, my motto was be great. When I got to the Bucks, it was be great every day. When I had to get better with the New York Giants, I finished with be great every minute of the day. And that's when I started adding in the details of what time you get to work, you know, how you dress when you go out to in the public, you know, how you speak to people, what you say to people in very profound moments in 20 seconds, and you know, and always being your best and being well read. When I went through my experience with the Giants of being great every minute of the day, I was able to better myself in a way that I could never imagine. You know, I learned to find out a lot of things about myself. So I try to just apply these real life situations to kids' lives who never had that mentor, never had that person in their life to really care about them. And it's amazing to see the change daily in these young men.
It is amazing. And let me ask you this, when you're working with kids, we're such a social media generation, the millennials, everybody tied to their electronics. How do you tear them away from that and keep them grounded in the real world?
Well, a lot of people say, how do you tear them away? But the reality is through technology, there's so many jobs that are becoming available. So from my education and what I've learned is you don't necessarily want to pry a kid from technology-based things. Now, video games is one thing. But when it comes to interacting on Facebook and building websites and writing codes, all of these things are integral, important things that a kid could need if he wanted to go into that job profession. Those types of professions are now the leading in pay. So if you're familiar with how to start a Facebook or start a blog and writing and all of these creative things, I think that we need to embrace a culture that's before us and use it to expand our mindset, not take it away.
Okay.
You know, understanding that, yes, there are times nobody wants to see what you're eating. You know, there are a lot of things that are not, or what you, or the clothes that you have on, you know, but creatively inspire them to tie in what they're doing with something that they can go on and be great at. If you like to post things, let's start posting stories. Let me teach you how to write. Let me teach you how to start with a plot, with a thesis. Let me teach you how to have a climax. Let me teach you how to get attention getters. Let me teach you these things and go post that and watch the responses from people, because guess what, Big Brother MC, I have a platform now and I can make you famous. If you're willing to work, I can get you great attention and great comments on your abilities. So I don't necessarily indulge in trying to pry kids away. I like to embrace it because I know, you know, I'm a full-time student now. I'm in communications, and I'm mm-hmm. taking these Facebook classes and communications and voice and diction classes and social media for professional classes. These are the things that kids are doing, and I'm learning about it, how it can enhance business knowledge and business sense. So I just, hey, go with it. But there's some specific details that we can add as a community and as experts, we can add to tweak what they're doing to make them great, and even in that aspect.
Well, you're very strong on education, and I did read one thing that you promised your mom. You promised her that you would graduate, and you eventually did. You kept that promise, didn't you?
Well, I have not graduated yet.
No?
I am a full-time student. I started this semester with 33 hours to go. And I'm taking 14 hours this semester. I'm going to take 2 hours in the summer, and I'll finish off with about 11 to 12 hours next fall. And next fall, this coming December, I will graduate. And I have a vision of me asking my parents to come down for one of my speaking engagements.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually going to be my graduation.
Oh.
And that's going to be one of the most exciting times of my life, where I can surprise my mom and just hand her my diploma, and my parents get to enjoy all three of their kids graduated from college. You know, I think that that's a great accomplishment for any parent. And my mom was my English teacher in the 10th grade. She was a English major, and she promoted, you know, speaking well and doing homework and all of those great things that I didn't want to do when I was young. But when the older that I got, when I was able to mature, I was very thankful to the platform that my mother set before me, because it just gave me some great tools to launch my career in every aspect. And the reason why I'm in this room here at Studio 10 Live are because of some of the principles that my mom subliminally taught me back in the day. And I value that, and I want to give her something in return.
It's going to be a magnificent moment. Well, I was going to ask you, with everything that you do, Michael, now you're taking on co-hosting duties with Stephanie on Studio 10. You're a busy man. How do you like it?
I love it. I love it. This is something that I've always wanted to work in television, whether it be movies or, you know, just normal television, having a platform to bring great stories to the community and give attention to those things that sometimes go unnoticed. And I've grown to have a voice in the underserved communities, and I never wanted to be stuck behind a desk talking sports. I love football. Mm-hmm. I love sports, and yes, I can break it down. But catching a football never changed anybody's life, you know. And though I've worked many of sports shows and been on Big Ten Network and had some radio interviews, it just was never that profound to me. Now, I'm not saying that I wouldn't do it if I got an opportunity, but my life's dream was to be in a capacity where I could do it all. You know, not just be limited to sports.
Uh-huh.
So I did a few interviews, and I came in, did a few shows for them, and they liked what they saw, and they thought that it would be a great team. And I'm so glad that I'm working with Stephanie because, you know, she's the leader on our crew, and she's the expert, and she's patient with me. She's taking me. I'm a rookie all over again, you know. When I was a rookie with the Bucks, I had Mike Allstott and Derrick Brooks to kind of lead the way for me, to show me how to be great. And now Stephanie kind of takes the reins. She's able to pick up when I'm slacking, when I mess up. She jumps right in to make me feel comfortable in ways that people probably would never know that we made a mistake. That's how good she is. And to be in this environment, especially with my executive producer, Maureen, mm-hmm. who is fabulous. I just had my first live on-air production at the Florida Strawberry Festival.
Yeah.
And when I can get so panicky at times and I want to go off track, and she very easily just reels me back in. Nope, we're not doing that. Nope. And I was in a moment last night, and I was thinking, like, I had Coach Saban at LSU, one of the greatest the greatest college coach of all time. I played for, you know, John Gruden was an awesome coach, but the standout in my professional career was Tom Coughlin, you know, a guy who just expected greatness every day. And now in this profession, it's my first time having an actual job since I've been retired. So that's a great feeling within itself. But to be paired with Maureen, my executive producer, who carries on those characteristics, you know, she keeps me focused. She expects greatness. And we go through our lines over and over and over and over. And she went, I'll mess up 100 times. And when that camera comes on, it's time to go to work. And if I do a great job, I can see it in her eyes. Good job. Well, good job, my son. You know, and she has these antics that, you know, she keeps me serious at times. We have such a great time, but she's here as my tutor. And it's such a great feeling to have people who care about you and want to see you grow. Obviously, I want to take this as big as we can go, but if it was my destiny to be right here on this platform for the duration of my television career, I think I found a great match in Maureen and Stephanie. I couldn't ask for better people to help bring me along.
Well, I think you found a great team to work with there. So I have to ask you this. Who's tougher on you, a head coach or a producer?
Well, Maureen is more happier. She has a more happier approach, but her approach is just as effective. So when I get off, she has this thing with her hands that she does to just kind of shut me up. Ah, get up. We're not doing that, you know, and I'll just giggle on the inside. I'll shut my lips up really quick. But Coach Saban, he was a guy who just, he cared more about his players as people more than he did as players. And that just stood out in my career. A quick story, his first time back at LSU when he went on to be with Alabama, they were retiring my high school jersey at my high school. And he got off the bus with his team. He drove straight to my high school, Christian Life Academy, and he got off the bus and came into my high school retirement and delivered a 20-minute speech, kissed my mom and dad, shook my hand, gave me a big hug, and went on to beat LSU the next day. So, you know, having a guy of his caliber who cared about his players so much. Well, I'm far removed from LSU, and so was he. But because of our relationship, what he meant to me and what our class meant to him, for him to do that, you know, you don't get that a lot in coaches. And to be one of the best to ever do it and you still have those characteristics lets me know that I was a part of some great things. And so I like to remember those things as I'm going through my career. And to be compared to a Saban and a Coughlin when I compare Maureen to them speaks very highly of her.
Oh, I'd say so.
Speaks very highly of her, and I couldn't be in a more blessed situation.
Well, I think that's a wonderful way to wrap up the interview. It's a pleasure to have you in my studio every morning. I've got 10 on, looking at you every morning,
ma'am.
And checking out what you're wearing and what you're doing.
Thank you so much. We're going to do some, I'm hoping I can bring some more some creative things, more interactive things. So stay tuned to our Facebook things as well. We're going to try to bring in some of the stuff that I do with our Generation Next.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start out, lost the name of it. I bought the domain name last night.
Well, don't worry about it because nobody else can buy it. You've got it.
I got it. So it goes to the point of being great and doing things like writing and poetry and mm-hmm. things of that nature. Oh, the next best thing. That's what it is. I am the next best thing. So my dreams for this show is to be the next best thing. And when I looked on the internet last night, the next best thing was taken already.
Mm.
And, you know, these little tags, you know, I've grown to love Stephanie and everything that she does. I want this show to be the next best thing. So I thought about how can we tie that in? I am the next best thing and promote in terms of writing, getting kids encouraged by interacting with us on Facebook. So hopefully we can add some more fun and educating and creative things to bring some awareness to people who want to be the next best thing. So this platform has been tremendous, and I'm loving every minute of it. But thank you, Ann, for your time and bringing me in. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, pleasure to speak with you. And I'll tell you, we actually met a few years ago. And I remember two things about you. You smelled amazing.
What?
I still don't know what cologne you were wearing.
Issey Miyake. I can tell you that.
It was good.
Issey Miyake.
Oh, it was nice. And you were also wearing a brown T-shirt with the lettering God's Son and a beautiful gold cross. And I just remember being so impressed with you then. You know, it's a pleasure to catch up with you now.
Oh, Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's been a wonderful journey, and the great thing is it's just starting.
That's exciting.
Yeah, imagine that. It's just starting.